people will laugh, and this probably will sound familiar, be like, oh, you know me, I'm so addicted to my phone.
Yeah, like an identity statement.
Yeah, even, like, yeah, it's exactly. Yeah. It's like, and we laugh about it. And the reason we laugh about it is because we're kind of giving ourselves an excuse for it.
We feel uncomfortable. So it's a nervous laugh, kind of.
And there's an understanding that the person on the other side is going through it as well. So they get it. Surely you get it. And so we wouldn't actually do that with any other addiction.
Welcome to the But I Tell You podcast. On today's episode, we get to interview Joey Odom. If you're not familiar with Joey, Joey's work has changed my life. He is the inventor of Aro, which is a technology where you put your phone in a box and it actually logs how much time you spend away from your phone, and even a mobile app that helps support the same. Joey is a really insightful person who lives what he values, which is about helping us to be more present with Jesus. How to discover a more beautiful view of Jesus through being more present to our relationships. If you enjoy today's podcast episode, please subscribe wherever you listen, as well as share with friends and join us on social media at But I Tell You Pod. Thanks again for listening to our show. Welcome to the But I Tell You podcast. I am really excited today to have Joey Odom on our podcast. This is a man who has shaped something in my very home, my use in my relationship with technology, and I'm so excited for you to hear a bit about his story, his life, and how God has called him to help other people discover a more beautiful view of Jesus and how to follow him.
Love it.
So thanks for being on
the show. Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Excited to chat. Yeah, it's fun.
Tell folks who may not know you a little bit more about kind of your journey and what your day-to-day life is.
Yeah, so I'll go way back. Is that okay? Can we do way back? Let's go back 11 years.
Perfect.
So when my son Harrison is now 16 years old, and he's my dude. Like, he's the best. He's the best kid ever. When he was five, he was the best kid ever.
Awesome.
And he was playing his first soccer season.
And it's Harrison, and then you have a daughter too.
A daughter, Gianna, 14. Who is hilarious. Yeah, they're the 16 and 14. They're the absolute best. So Harrison's 5 years old. He's playing his first soccer season. He's just a good, sweet kid. And youth soccer success stories are generally the more aggressive kids, kids just released from like a halfway house program or something like that. So it's an aggressive child who's successful at soccer. Harrison was not one of those aggressive kids. So he's playing all year. He had not scored a goal all season, and everybody else had. So we lug out the lawn chairs on another Saturday afternoon. We go out to watch another hour of 5-year-old soccer. And midway through the game, something really, really amazing happened. So Harrison rears back his leg. And it's almost like, Tyler, it's almost like this, like, in my mind, I play this like a movie. It's slow motion.
You're seeing it from the outside.
Yeah, James Horner music. And he rears back his leg. He kicks the ball, and it glides over the grass into the back of the net for his first soccer goal.
Man.
And it was not the sweet parents there. Everybody went crazy because they knew, everybody had scored his goal except for Harrison. He scored his first goal. His coach lifts him up. But something happened right in between the ball hitting the back of the net and his coach lifting him up. And Harrison turned to the sidelines to lock eyes with me, right, to see the pride and the smile on my face for his very first soccer goal. It's once in a lifetime, literally. And it was magical, except for the fact that I missed every bit of it. That I missed this whole thing. Because when Harrison looked over, all he saw was the top of my head because I was looking down at my phone.
Yeah.
And people asked, they're like, okay, well, what were you looking at? And the answer is, I have no idea. It could have been the most important email that I've ever gotten. It could have been a cat video. Like, I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But I do know that that single moment is gone forever because I missed it.
Man.
Now, that was a moment where I said to myself, like, something's wrong. Like, my life didn't drastically change, but I did have, it was like a seminal moment to say, like, something's wrong. Like, this is one of the most important relationships in my life, the top three, right? My wife and my kids, like the top three relationship in my life. And you think about all these things when you're starting a family. You think about, okay, like you grow up, you think, who am I going to marry? So you think about this person, then you get married to them, and you think, oh, can we have kids? And a lot of people go through like a bunch of heartache and blood, sweat, and tears to have kids. And then you have kids. And then I found myself subverting all these relationships that I'd wanted for all my life by this little relationship with this device in my pocket. So at that time, I was in commercial real estate. So I was in finance and commercial real estate. And it was a few years later when I got a text from a friend of mine named Heath Wilson who said, hey, I have this idea. And the basic idea was, we're not really good with our phones. We're kind of missing these moments, even though we say these relationships are important. But and the basic premise was, what if the world could look different?
Yeah.
What if we could reshape this relationship we have with our devices And in turn, that will reshape the most important relationships in our lives. So left that career that I've been in for 15 years, and we've been on this journey for 5 years now with RO, helping other families rethink and reshape their relationship with their devices, knowing that when you do that, it changes your relationships that run around you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you think about many of us, myself included, love the idea of being more present to my kids. I have 3 kids, 10, 8, and 5, and I have the best of intentions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, come along, I find this box that's for sale called RO, and my wife teases me and says, like, you could put your phone in the drawer. And it's like, no, I can't. Like, I am I am powerless to my addiction, so to speak, or, you know, at least my compulsion, you know, this thing that it's easy to believe that I don't have volition in.
Mm.
But what I admire and find so curious is how did you move from, you know, hey, you know, I've been told that I'm just stuck.
Yeah.
And that this is just what we do. Mm. And this is just how it is. And, you know, we all struggle with this, right?
Yeah.
To actually like thinking, you know, I could make a change with this. Mm. I could actually help other people change their relationship with their phone. Or even their really with their relationship with their family and their loved ones, the people they love.
Yeah, I think it began. So at RO, like one of our three core values is belief. Like we believe, and I as I think back on the origin story of that, I don't know that it was actual belief. I think it was actually just I hope. Like I hope that
this might work.
Yeah, like it was just like and maybe like it's like I hope there's a chance this can look different. But we didn't know like that the world could look different. So you think about. I mean, there was no one worse. Like when you talk about like chief of sinners, like it was me on my phone. Truly, like I was just bad at it. I was at all times, like whether in conversation or at meals. And I still have, by the way, that propensity, which is why I need something to help me with this. So it began with that kind of hope that things would look different. And as we've spent a bunch of time on this, I think our posture, like and this is going to be what I'm about to say is going to kind of delve into some stats or scientific, but I want to think about it more as a posture. So you alluded to this a little bit. When we all talk about our phones, we talk about them in terms of addiction, and the way we talk about them, and you just touched on it, is like people will laugh, and this probably will sound familiar, be like, oh, you know me, I'm so addicted to my phone.
Yeah, like an identity statement.
Yeah, even, like, yeah. It's like, and we laugh about it. And the reason we laugh about it is because we're kind of giving ourselves an excuse for it.
We feel uncomfortable, so it's a nervous laugh, kind of.
And there's an understanding that the person on the other side is going through it as well, so they get it. Surely you get it. And so we wouldn't actually do that with any other addiction. So if you imagine, be like, dude, you know me and heroin, huh? Yeah. Huh? Right? I can't get away from it. It's so funny, right?
Yeah.
Like we wouldn't talk about real addictions in that way. And the reason we wouldn't really on heroin is because we know factually, like this leads to bad things, right? Yeah. And with our phones, in a way, we're almost excusing this behavior without recognizing that, like, no, this is crushing intimacy in relationships. Yeah. Like, period. Like, this is crushing our intimacy in relationships, and we're giving ourselves an excuse. And so the science would tell you that most people are not addicted to their phones. Like the characteristics of the way we use phones does not really mimic addiction. It doesn't. You said compulsion. It actually does. It mimics compulsion a little bit more than that. And that's not to say that things on our phones aren't addictive. And that's not to say some people are not addicted. But I'm going to say for most people listening, you're not addicted to your phone. Yeah. And here's why I think that's
important.
You've
heard it said that you're addicted to your phone. Yes. But I'm going to tell you.
Oh, come on. Ah, oh, look at this. I like how you did. Come on, son. Just full circle us there. But that's what it is. You've heard it said that you're addicted. And here's why I don't like that. I don't like that because there's something kind of unspoken when you say addiction. And that is, there's nothing you can do about it. When you think about a 12-step program, the very first thing is I'm completely powerless over the thing. I'm completely powerless. And I don't like that thought that I'm powerless over something. So what if instead of saying I'm addicted, which becomes an identity statement, what if you just said I have a bad habit?
Yeah.
So if you said I have a bad habit, and if you looked at it more habitually,
yes.
And what happens there is all of a sudden I can kind of sit up straight, my shoulders back. I can think, wait a second, I can do something about a habit. Now, all of a sudden, just by identifying it as a habit, you have agency over that thing. And if we can look at that and say, like, no, I have agency over this thing. I have some things I can do. And this goes into the science of habit formation.
Yes.
James Clear's talked about it in Atomic Habits. Charles Duhigg's talked about it. And it is all this habit loop. It is cue, routine, reward. Yes. Cue, routine, reward. And that's where we started with Aura was, if let's look at this as a habit. And let's look at it through the habit loop of what's this cue that's going to remind us to do the things that we know we want to do, which will lead us to a routine of doing that thing that we want to do, which will lead to a reward, which is where on one side, like with our system, like with Aro, it's kind of the inherent like badges and all that stuff you do within an app and streaks and all that kind of stuff. But the real reward is what happens on the other side of your phone. Like the real reward is the conversation that you have with your daughter. The real reward is the time that you have with your spouse. The real reward is that moment of, you know, I read the Bible in the mornings and it takes generally about 23 minutes. And that's kind of the greatest part of my day is these 23 minutes I have of focus.
Yes.
So that's where we began with Aro was what if, and I don't even remember the original question, Tyler, but it's like, what if the world could look different? Like we hope that this world can look different. And I can tell you, and this is for you, you've experienced, and this for anybody listening, like, yes, it can. Like, and you're hearing it from the chief of sinners, like, yes, the world can look different. Yes. And that doesn't mean you won't struggle. That doesn't mean it's not going to be difficult. But I fully believe if we understand how high the stakes are for us to get this right, then we will go to whatever extremes we need to solve this. Because it is important. And to your wife's point, I can't wait to talk to her to refute all of her arguments. Yeah. No, but the point is like, and I was joking with you, you mentioned that line to me before. Well, we pay to go to gyms. You can burn calories for free, right? We can you can run around the neighborhood, you can do push-ups on your own. But we do when we realize that something is valuable, we do what we need to do. We go to whatever extremes we need to remove the friction of doing that difficult but valuable thing.
Yes. Yeah, the having a good why, you can endure any how, right?
I love that. Absolutely.
Like, is that how that's said?
I think that's right,
Victor Frankl,
you nailed it,
Look at that. Come on. Victor Frankl for the win. Yes, it's so fascinating because I actually grew up, my first spiritual formation was in AA. So as a kid, you know, I'm a son of an addict who, you know, I grew up visiting. I'd go to Alaska and I'd go to this Lutheran church basement. Mm. And so my first formation was around fixation. It was around concepts of, you know, those 12 steps and those things. Mm. And while there's such beauty in it and there can be such healing, it really is fascinating to think about, you know, what we behold. Mm. And the gift for me, for example, as the first Christian in my family, as someone who, you know, is rounding a corner to wanting to put to bed generational curses of things like addiction, where I'm tempted towards bad habits or compulsions is being able to turn towards my, you know, Jesus's face, first of all, because I have margin, not on my phone, I'm present.
Yeah.
My kid's face and really start to rewire those things. And so, for example, one of the things I heard you say that, you know, I think is beautiful is telling my kids, hey, I'll hand my daughter my phone, my 10-year-old, and I'll say, can you put it in Aro?
Mm.
And so, because I heard the concept of I can help their habits form even before they have them.
Yeah.
And so I'm just really thankful for what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I'm really thankful for the way that I think it's going to help people discover and rediscover they can connect with Jesus beautifully and not just feel always in two places at once.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe, and I don't want to overgeneralize here, but I think especially as men, I think we sometimes will over-romanticize the heroic things that we would like to do in our lives.
Yes.
Like we will.
Yeah.
So my one of my favorite examples is my daughter who we went to a daddy-daughter dance. She's probably 8 or 9 years old, and they had this little booth. You did these crafts. And it was write down something you want to do with your father, or your dad, write down something you want to do with your daughter. So we both wrote individually these things we wanted to do. Mm. I wrote down, go to Paris. My daughter wrote down, go to the ice skating rink tomorrow.
Yeah.
Right? And then that's the thing that she wants. And so as a result, here I am, like, I could save up for a few years to go to Paris, right? Or we can go ice skating tomorrow, right? And so when you said, and you're exactly right, the thing that in shaping that for our kids and handing them our phones and then saying, here, will you put this away? That's something heroic because it is. It's starting to get into like the neural pathways and starting to believe that like I'm putting this away. And what that communicates to your daughter, what that communicates to your daughter is what's your daughter's name?
Miriam.
Miriam, I'm more important than daddy's phone. And what the problem is that we've gotten to a point in society, my kids got to a point here where they begin to believe that our phones are more important than them. So our kids will always say to us, they have these mommy watch me, these daddy watch me moments. And if people listening have ever heard from their young kids, young 2, 3, 4 years old, you hear from them like, daddy, put down your phone. Daddy, no phone. Daddy, look at me. And these moments suck, right? I mean, they're hard moments, I believe if we've heard that, I want people to celebrate those moments.
Yes.
And there are two reasons why you need to celebrate those moments. The first one is that means if your child says, "Daddy, put down your phone. Daddy, no phone. Mommy, watch me." That means your child likes you.
They want to be
yeah,
with you.
That's
they
want to good. See your face. Yeah. They want to see your face. They want to be with you. How great is that? That's fantastic. And the second reason is, and I think this is even more powerful, is at that point, just by virtue of them saying that, what they're really saying is, "I believe I'm more important than your phone."
Yeah.
And that's good. They have an innate sense of value that says, like, I am worth being looked at.
Yes.
And when we need to get concerned is when our kids will stop asking us that, when they stop saying that, because all of a sudden they begin to believe that they're not.
Yeah.
So these powerful things like handing that over, because then I bet you that signals to Miriam, oh, it's dad hangout time right now.
Yes.
And it's those moments where she can feel like I am the center of my dad's attention and affection. And that, what's that going to do? That's going to sustain her. That's going to normalize for her what a relationship should look like. So someday when Miriam starts dating somebody, someday, when they're sitting across the table, and if that guy phone snubs her, what's she going to do? She's going to order the surf and turf. She's going to let him pay, and she's never going to talk to him again, right? Like, that's what she should do. You got to train her right for that, right?
Yes.
So it's normalizing these things in a relationship that she absolutely should expect.
That's right. Man, it's so good. It's so helpful. And I think, like, you know, in our moment, you know, for me, one of the biggest losses as a parent or as a husband, as a friend, who's not been fully present with my relationships as a result of this insatiable device that has every reason for me to spend time with it has been, I've wondered about my memories.
Mm.
I've wondered about, like, what I'm going to miss because I couldn't actually ingest what I was chewing on. I was with my kid and then I jumped to the email from work, or I was with my friend and then I thought about something else. I should just check that. We have a moment, a gap in time. I had a nudge from God, but then I decided to, you know, jump on Slack or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to ask, you know, like, if you had any kind of final words of encouragement that you would throw out there to help people realize, like, that more beautiful why you're talking about, you know, anything that you would encourage us with about how we can connect with Christ or with those in our life, you know?
I think the biggest piece of advice that I would give people are two things, and it's start, stop. And the first is the start. The first is to start with yourself.
Yeah.
Is that this topic especially is so easy to point the finger.
Yeah.
Point the finger at your spouse, point the finger at your kids, point the finger at whomever. Like,
the phone, the company.
The phone, like, the company, exactly. Yeah. If instead we just started with ourselves, let's begin here and say, like, I am the thing, like, to quote Hamilton, I am the one thing in life I can't control. Like, obviously with God's grace, like, this is the thing, like, begin with yourself, look inwardly first. And the second one is to stop, like, stop at nothing. Like, this is worth the fight. This is worth the fight. I believe we are in an intimacy crisis in our relationships. Yes. We're absolutely in an intimacy crisis, but this is not terminal. This is something that we do have the opportunity to fight for. So I want people to stop at nothing. Stop at nothing, continue to fight. I believe RO is the most effective solution in the world, but there are others as well. So I would love people, go download the RO app, try it out for yourself, that'd be great. I would love people, if they're in churches, I want people to, we're launching with Gabe Lyons and Darren Whitehead, Digital Fast 2025.
Awesome.
So go to digitalfast2025.com to learn more about that, get your church involved. But keep fighting here, like, keep pushing, because it is worth it, absolutely worth it. And I believe you may not see it in a day, but you will start seeing the fruit. People will notice. My daughter, Gianna, one last story about Gianna. By the way, she's on my mind. Mm-hmm. Not that she isn't always, but I showed you a text message string she just sent me, which is hilarious. She's so funny. But when she was 9 years old, 10 years old, we were watching a movie. At the end of the movie, and this is just as RO was starting, she turned to me and she goes, "Dad, did you know that's the first time we've watched a movie and you haven't had your phone?" Which was a bit of a gut punch. Yeah, like, it was like,
every time you're like, can y'all stop telling us these things?
I've kind of been bad about that. But there was another side. It was like, okay, that's good. I'm proud of myself. I just did something that she noticed, because our kids will notice. They are noticing. They're noticing machines. So she noticed that. That happened 4 years ago. It was May 8th, 2020. And I know that because I wrote it in my journal. And I read it a couple months ago. And I told Gianna that story. I said, "Hey, do you remember when we watched that movie and you told me that?" She goes, "Yeah." And then she laughed. She goes, "Dad, it would be so funny, so weird if you had your phone during a movie now."
Wow.
So what's normal has shifted. What you believe is normal right now can shift.
Yes.
And it requires back to the stop at nothing. Just keep fighting for it, keep fighting for it, keep fighting for it. Your intimacy is worth it. Your marriage is worth it. Your relationship with Christ is worth it. Your relationship with your kids is worth it. The relationship to yourself is worth you stopping at nothing to get it right.
Amen. Man, this is so encouraging. Thank you for coming on the podcast. If folks want to discover more of what you're up to, how can they find your work?
Yeah, but just go download the RO app. Just go to the, wherever you get apps, at the Google Play Store or the Apple Play. What am I doing here?
I don't know.
The App Store. Yeah, the App Store. Goodness gracious.
I mean, you've been using RO so much.
Yeah, I'm so in the moment right now. That's awesome. Go download the app, try it out for free, and then also check out digitalfast2025.com to get your church involved in the digital fast.
Thank you, Joey.
Yeah, bro. Appreciate you. Appreciate it.